Hi, Juan Carlos Ordonez. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me on the show.
Juan Carlos is the media director, also does a lot of research at the Oregon Center for Public Policy that concentrates on the economy and the situation of the bottom 60% or so of residents of the state who live precariously. For many, most actually, for them, losing a job, one severe illness, maybe a divorce could plunge them into destitution. Today we are going to talk about taxes and how they fit into our system of extreme inequality. So, Juan Carlos, political theory understands taxes paying for the public programs that protect society from capitalism's single-minded drive for profit that generates extreme inequality and environmental destruction in the United States. That's at least the liberal political theory. But today, the capacity of the U.S. state to function effectively towards those goals is in doubt. Recently, Ron Wyden in Oregon, Biden, White House have introduced modest but meaningful tax increases, arguing that they will pay for expanding support for the poor and a great expansion of renewable energy that is a head start on saving the planet. Will these pass? Well, that's a long shot as the world gets meaner and hotter, but things can be done. That's how we'll conclude today. Juan Carlos, I've read that the poor pay a higher proportion of their meager incomes in taxes than the rich do. How does that happen? Let's start generally with the problems of most people and the problem with taxes.
Yes, it is the case that when we look at the situation at the national level, we see that something very strange has happened in the recent years, in that the super rich, the very richest 400 individuals today pay a lower overall tax rate than actually anyone else in the country, including the poorest. And this is when you factor in not just federal income taxes and federal taxes, but also state taxes that we pay here in Oregon, as well as local taxes. So when you look at the totality of taxes, it turns out that some of the richest people in the country, people like Bill Gates and folks like that, Elon Musk, pay less overall as a group than the very lowest earning Americans. This is also a situation that we see here in the state of Oregon. And in fact, the situation is in some ways more extreme, in that it's not just that the very richest pay the lowest share, but also here in Oregon, the lowest earning 20% of Oregonians pay the highest overall taxes out of their income than anyone else when you add up all state and local taxes. So in Oregon, we have an overall what's called a regressive tax structure that asks proportionally more of the poor than of the rich. And we see that at the national level as well, at the very top, where the multi-billionaires pay less than anyone else.
Let's get a little bit more detail on how the tax system contributes.
Yes, and maybe I can step back for a second and just reflect on the fact that our tax system, as you pointed out at the beginning, is how we pay for the vital public services that create quality of life for everyone: education, transportation, housing, healthcare, a whole array that provides, it really is, are the foundation of our society. And when the tax system is weak, when it's not working well, it bodes poorly for the kind of infrastructure that creates that quality of life. Just a good example, our nation and our state have been unable to pay for preschool education for all children. And that's a real lack of social infrastructure. So that's just one example, but there's many ways in which we have been failing to invest the necessary resources into our public infrastructure. But in addition to that, the tax system, in addition to paying for those public services, historically the tax system has been a check on concentrated economic power. And today we see that that tax system has been weakened. And so over the past few decades, those changes to our tax system, the weakening of the tax system, has contributed to the extreme concentration of income and wealth at the very top. So that's very important to point out. And there's different mechanisms for, really, when we look at the big picture, there's certain themes. There's no one reason why we've gotten to this situation, but there's several very important sort of trends that we've seen that lead to this situation. One of those is when we look at the difference in terms of how wages are taxed compared to income from assets, income produced by wealth. So, for example, the vast majority of Oregonians and the vast majority of Americans make their income from a paycheck. I mean, that's what most of us pay the bills, right? But for the wealthy, most of their income comes from their assets. So from the corporate stock that they own, from dividends, things like this that generates their income. And at the national level, those kinds of incomes from wealth get taxed at a lower rate. So folks may know that, for example, at the national level, capital gains gets a much lower tax rate than income from a paycheck. That's part of the reason. Another reason is just simply what's considered income. So, for example, if you own, like someone like Jeff Bezos, who owns a big portion of Amazon, and it's owned in the form of stock, his wealth can grow, and as long as he doesn't sell that stock, he's not going to be taxed on it. And so that factor alone, that the wealthy can postpone paying taxes, can mean that ultimately all that income, the growth of that income that then turns into wealth, is never taxed. And that basically, it means that often when they die, that income will never be taxed. And so that's yet another factor for how we are where we are, where there's so much wealth and income concentrated at the top. So another important sort of structural factor that explains why our tax system has become quite inequitable is tax avoidance, both by the wealthy and by corporations. So in terms of corporations, we know that they have been playing all kinds of games in terms of hiding their profits. And one of the main maneuvers that they use is simply artificially shifting profits from where they are earned here in the U.S. and here in Oregon, and artificially shifting them to somewhere outside the U.S., another jurisdiction that levies little or no corporate income tax. Often this might be, you know, the Cayman Islands or Bahamas, but often places like, you know, the Netherlands or Ireland. But they basically create shell corporations that then they pass, for example, intellectual property to that subsidiary and play shenanigans in terms of transferring the profits that were earned here in the U.S. and artificially shifting them overseas.
Right. All of that is just paper changes. There's no change in who buys it, who makes it, who where the company is actually located. It's just a lot of paper. They incorporate some dummy corporation in Ireland. Ireland is has been one of the major. They're now being corralled by the European Union to some extent, but they just shift the company and they make that company the owner of some intellectual property or whatever it is, and then all the profits get taxed at their rate, which is very close to zero.
Yes, and what's really revealing is that when CEOs report to their shareholders the profits, they report huge profits. We have been living for quite a number of years where corporate profits have been a very high level, and yet there are many corporations that report paying zero in taxes. And in fact, in 2020, there were 55 companies listed in the Fortune 500. In other words, 55 of the nation's biggest companies paid zero in federal income taxes, even though they were reporting to their shareholders healthy earnings. And this, by the way, included Nike, which is headquartered here in Oregon. And, you know, that year, Nike didn't pay a dime in federal income taxes, even though they reported $2.9 billion in pre-tax income that year. And in fact, Nike that year not just didn't pay any taxes, they got about $100 million in tax rebates from the federal government. So taxpayers were, in fact, subsidizing Nike. So shifting profits overseas is part of the equation. Part of it is a number of tax loopholes that exist. So just to give you a sense of it, it's called accelerated depreciation in terms of if a company invests in new equipment, you know, traditional accounting rules, they can depreciate that equipment. But for the tax rules, they're able to do it much more quickly, and it just gives them more so than what normally is the case. So they're able to sort of play by different rules under the tax system. And there's just a lot of tax loopholes that exist and new ones that have been created over the decades that not just allows them to reduce their tax bill, but it gives opportunities for their tax lawyers and accountants to devise new ways to sort of exploit complexity of the tax code to expand those loopholes even more than was initially intended. And by the way, these tax loopholes didn't arise out of nowhere. These are tax loopholes that corporations go and lobby Congress and the Oregon legislature for. So it's like they lobby for these loopholes, then they get put into place, then they take advantage of these loopholes, and then they further exploit them by sending their armies of tax lawyers and accountants to find new ways to further stretch them, if you will. And the other thing to keep in mind is that there's also been a reduction of the corporate tax rate over the years. And with respect to rich Americans, that has also been the case. Back during the Dwight Eisenhower years, in the 1950s, we had a maximum personal income tax rate of about 91%. That was the top rate. Today, that rate is below 40%, and that's just the tax rate that's on paper. But as we discussed before, the reality is that the very rich, in some years, have been paying nothing. And in fact, there was a really explosive report that was published by ProPublica last year. They were able to get a hold of not the direct tax returns of the richest people, but basically information gleaned from those tax returns by the billionaires of this country. And what they found was that many of them in some recent years have paid absolutely nothing in federal income taxes, like zero. And we're talking about people like Jeff Bezos of Amazon, Warren Buffett, Elon Musk, who in some recent months, has overtaken Jeff Bezos as the richest person. So we're talking about the absolutely super richest people in this country, wealthiest people, that have been paying nothing. You and I have been paying more in federal income taxes, and the listeners will have been paying more in federal income taxes than many of the super billionaires.
That's also true, it seems to me, of a fairly large number of people. It's not just those super billionaires. It's your average billionaire who also has, there are tax firms around the country who advertise themselves as having the latest loopholes, basically. And those people, in fact, get hired. They put their names on their tax return. And the IRS has been so hollowed out by cuts in their appropriations and therefore cuts in their staff, they are no longer not just examining, but examining carefully. I mean, not just examining carefully, but even examining those tax returns, because they do not have the staff with the expertise has been hollowed out. And because if they, in fact, bring a corporation to tax court, their lawyers are outperforming and no more, and have made a whole set of arguments. The IRS is just outmanned and outthought, it seems to me, although they've now passed a modest increase for the first time in like 40 years of the for IRS personnel. Those are all ways that the rich can increase their income, and they have the money to hire the staff to influence our legislators. It's a nice game while it lasts. In fact, maybe we should get to that. There are just so many loopholes. Individual companies go to their congressperson, right? Like Nike will go to I'm not sure that Wyden or Markley would actually play that game, but certainly Packwood used to, and Smith and the others. They just put in individual language in the tax code that would only benefit Nike because of all the particulars. This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO, talking to Juan Carlos Ordonez, who's the media director and researcher at the Oregon Center for Public Policy, that concentrates on the economy and the situation of the bottom 60% or so of residents who live precariously, with many winding up destitute. We so far discussed the gross unfairness of the tax code, its inadequacies, indeed how and why that's happened, the enormous power of the rich now, and which specific provisions must be changed. And Carlos, let's get to what can be done and how it can be done to change the, not just the tax code actually, but change the whole way the resources necessary to run a decent government, what should be done.
Well, there is obviously a lot to be done. Maybe we can begin by focusing on what ought to be done at the federal level. So thinking about the structural causes of how we are where we are that we discussed before. So, you know, in terms of the difference between how income from a paycheck is taxed differently from income from wealth, income from the sale of stocks and bonds and other capital gains, a simple solution would be to just tax them at the same rate, right? So that's fairly straightforward. And certainly Senator Wyden has proposed doing just that in the past, and that would be an excellent, obvious step. But there's also a more complicated problem, which is the fact that you can be sitting on earnings on your stock, on your, someone like Jeff Bezos can be sitting on massive growth of his wealth from the stock of Amazon that he owns, but he's never sold it, so he may end up dying and never paying a dime on it. So what to do about it? Well, this has been a discussion that's been going on for some time now, and President Biden actually released a few days ago a tax plan that begins to take that issue head on. So, for example, one of the things that his proposal would do would be to impose a minimum tax on the super wealthy. So, and we're talking here about a very tiny sliver of folks, the wealthiest 1/100 of 1% of households. And these are households that have wealth of at least $100 million. So I don't know anybody who has wealth of $100 million. They're few and far between. So these households would be required to pay at least a minimum of 20% on their income, including their income on their unrealized capital gain. So if I'm a billionaire and my stock portfolio grows by several million in a year, even though I haven't sold, this would apply to those gains. And there's rules as to how exactly it would be implemented. So that's part of the solution for sure, addressing that question of wealth. Another structural solution that hasn't gotten as much attention but has to be on the table is strengthening the estate tax. And the estate tax historically has been how the nation has taxed vast fortunes that would pass on to heirs and has been a check on the preventing the creation of an American aristocracy, right? But over the decades, again, through the lobbying by the super rich, there's been a weakening of the estate tax. So strengthening both in terms of the rate that gets paid on estates that are affected, but also on the exemption of the estate tax, the amount that gets sort of passed on tax-free has increased massively over the decades. So addressing those two issues, strengthening the estate tax would be an important step for sure. There's other proposals to do similar to what the Biden tax plan does more broadly for basically a way of getting at taxing wealth is an important conversation. And as you mentioned, the IRS has been hit very hard in terms of defunding over the decades. There was a report that came out last year showing that of the 4 million or so partnerships that exist in the country. And partnerships can be very opaque kind of corporate entities, and they can be very large. The Trump Organization is probably a partnership. So they can be massive organizations that own other partnerships, and yet only a tiny amount of partnerships get audited any one year. So the IRS just simply doesn't have the capacity to look at these complicated corporate entities and audit them. By comparison, the poor get audited at a much higher rate. People who receive the earned income tax credit, a tax credit for low-income workers, they're much more likely to get audited than a partnership. And it's just simply because it's easier for the IRS. They don't have the investigative capacity to really look at these complicated vehicles. As you said, they're completely outgunned by the wealthy and corporations. So putting more resources into the IRS is definitely a must-do. You mentioned that there was an increase in funding for the IRS recently, and that is, in fact, the case. The Biden tax plan would do even more, so that's definitely a step forward. But we really need the IRS to be able to look to see who is avoiding taxes and how they're doing it and really clamping down on all that tax avoidance and evasion. And we can also look at corporations. And the Biden tax plan also calls for raising the corporate income tax rate from 21% to 28%. That would be a very good step. There's discussions internationally to establish a corporate minimum, in essence, of 15%. So the Senate would need to ultimately ratify such a treaty, such an agreement. So there's definitely discussions there, but obviously there's a lot to do. And let's not forget, there's a lot to do here in Oregon.
Yeah. Juan Carlos, you've been terrific at summarizing all of the problems and, in fact, the solutions within the tax code as it exists. Many of the things can be changed to raise a whole lot more money. My sense is that the challenges to not just the U.S., but to the whole planet are now so great and require so much resources to deal with. That is the environmental destruction that humans have caused, that's now led to global warming that could go out of control any year now. Say the climate scientists were really living on borrowed time. That's going to take a whole another level of money, and it'll be really have to do a mobilization for war when, in fact, the government prints money and a war economy can be very good for the poor, actually, because they get employed. It's a super productive economy, which we could have, and we could, in fact, build the devices that would reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It seems to me, though, that at this point, the key to it is not just naming the taxes and the threats. The key to it is building movements that would change the character of our governing, the character and characters of the people who are representing us in the legislatures and in the bodies authorized to make the law. And nothing can substitute for a great uprising of a left movement that would take on those power structures and, in fact, begin operating to literally save our lives. I'm afraid that's probably another conversation, Juan Carlos, but give us your last words.
Yeah, I think that you hit on something that's right on, and that we know what the solutions are. I mean, that's not a big mystery. Yes, it's complicated, but the big picture is fairly clear in terms of what the problem is and the approaches that we need to take to solve what's plaguing our tax system. So it ultimately does come to a political question, a question of political will. And in order to move elected leaders to do what needs to be done, yes, it does take a social movement, no question about it. It means everyone, or at least the vast majority of Americans and Oregonians, demanding change. And as much as I hate connecting it to war, we do know that, for example, some of the big changes that were made to our tax system that improved them for the better were actually carried out during times of emergencies like war. During the Civil War, we saw the first income tax put in place. Certainly during the Great Depression and World War II, we saw big increases and improvements to the tax system to address those big needs. Certainly the climate crisis that we face, the mass economic insecurity that Americans and Oregonians face, vast groups of folks who are struggling to pay the bills. These are the kinds of crises that hopefully can motivate enough Americans to demand and achieve change.
Juan Carlos Ordóñez, thanks a lot for talking to us.
Thank you so much, Bill. Always a pleasure.